Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Let's head up to Newark tonight. Predators and Devils, 6:30 puck drop, 5:30 pregame right here on 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here in studio. Adam Vinken there from The Athletic. That's where you can find his work. Adam, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, my voice is still here, barely, but so I'm doing good as long as it's here.
That's good. You work in a medium where your voice is necessary.
It's kind of important, yeah.
Yeah.
That is a good point, Adam. Something we were talking about earlier, Mikael Granlund, does it look like maybe he's turned a corner under John Hines' system?
Did you happen to be reading The Athletic today by chance?
I read The Athletic all the time.
I wrote about that today because I feel personally, and I'd be curious for your viewpoints as well, that I feel like Mikael Granlund, perhaps more than any player on the team, appears rejuvenated by the coaching change. I think the way that he's played, especially in the last four or five games, is almost night and day from what we saw from him before John Hines took over. I just think stylistically, he did not fit with Peter Laviolette. And I think last night was a perfect example of the value that he can bring. You know, he won a puck battle behind the net to start that cycle, for lack of a better term, around the offensive zone to Yannick Weber, and then planted himself in front, tied up Michael Kempe, and did exactly what he needed to do for that puck to get in the net. And I'm very curious as to how the Predators proceed from here, because among their tradable assets on the roster, he's probably the most attractive, even though he has struggled. And if you're them and he sustains this play, do you hold on to him as sort of an own rental and hope that he can help you back into a playoff spot? Or do you realize that with their salary cap situation being what it is, it's unlikely that he's going to be able to come back next year? If everything stays the same, and trade him regardless of the standings and hope that you get something back in return. So I think the next couple of weeks, you know, I look at it as, you know, tonight's game, the game against Vegas, and the four-game road trip to Western Canada. I think by the end of that road trip, David Poile needs to know what he's going to do. And I wonder if Mikael Granlund continues to play like this, if that changes his thinking about what to do with him by February 24th.
It's a fascinating question and an issue, Adam, for all the reasons you threw out there. My observation would be, I think he plays the same way every night. If you go back, he had a great game in Pittsburgh, led the comeback, had the breakthrough. This was before they made the coaching change. So it was starting to happen. And I think you and I both looked at some of these things early in the season when he was struggling, that the analytics looked pretty good in terms of what kind of scoring chances he would get. I like the work ethic that he always brings to the table. I think he helps you win even when he is not scoring at the clip that he had been. But I also believe that, like you said, I think mentally, as much as anything else, there's a refresher. There's a new outlook with the coaching change, and maybe he's a guy that has the weight lifted off a little bit more. And now he's getting the results. So it's maybe a little bit of mix of everything, but I just think he's a guy that, regardless of the situation, is a winning player that works extremely hard, and he's sort of an untapped source, right? If he can start scoring anywhere close to the rate he had in the past, then I think they would take that in a heartbeat, and I don't know that you could trade that.
Right, and you're exactly right, Willie. The first day of the John Hines era, all of the players and even John Hines and David Poile were talking about how it's a clean slate for everybody. And And I think just the way that John wants his forwards involved in the offense suits Mikhail Granlund, as well as a few other players, in terms of breaking out the puck and the way he wants the players to attack in the offensive zone. I just think that John Hines' style of play, based on what I've been able to absorb of it in the last few weeks, just seems more tailored to the way that Mikhail Granlund likes to play. And, you know, every story you read now about, you know, trade deadline rankings, trade tiers, whatever you want to call it, and you look at the players who could be available to deadline, Mikhail Granlund is on every single list.
Yep.
I mean, Craig Smith is too. But Mikhail Granlund is on every single list. And, you know, if Mikhail Granlund continues to play well, but the team doesn't make up any ground, it improves his trade value and you get more from him. If he plays well and the team also plays well, as you mentioned, that's an untapped source of offense that could help them, improve their standing in the playoff race. And, you know, teams do this from time to time. You look at Columbus, for example. It's a much different example, but they decided to stick with Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky last season, knowing that they were going to leave in free agency. It helped them get further than they ever had, but of course both of them left for nothing. That's always the risk. But if you feel that Mikhail Granlund can help you, you know, in a situation where this team, you know, doesn't have, you know, only has so many chances at the Stanley Cup, and you want to keep him, and that means you realize, hey, he's going to leave in the summertime, we're not going to get anything out of it. You know, if that's a risk David's willing to take, if Mikhail's playing well, then I think he'll take it.
I think you're dead on. It's going to be a very interesting thing to read, just because, and I think they knew this when they traded for him last year and gave up Kevin Fiala, that they knew they would get to this point, right? That it was not going to be easy to sign Mikhail Granlund to the next contract because he makes a lot of money, and they knew they were going to be up against the cap some. So they've been dealing with this and thinking about this for a long, long time. So I think let's expand it a little further. The line last night, Adam, of Matt Duchene on the wing, Ryan Johansson in the middle, and Granlund on the other wing is a huge focal point line, right? Tell me how that line does for the next several weeks, and that's going to go a long way because those are three players that they count on heavily the way the thing is drawn up, and none of them have had great years, right? In fact, they've had well below average of what they normally have done before. So that's a really intriguing trio there.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I've been looking into Ryan Johansson. I talked to him yesterday. I talked to John Hines about him a couple days ago. Of course, you know, he did not play very much against the Maple Leafs earlier in the week. But one thing that was interesting about Ryan's deployment so far before last night's game under John Hines is he had been starting a significantly higher portion of his 5-on-5 shifts in the defensive zone. And John Hines' objective is, as Ryan has talked about since he's been here, you know, I remember during the playoff run in 2017, you know, I remember how much pride Ryan Johansson took after that first round series against Chicago and shutting down Jonathan Toews. I mean, that was something that really meant a lot to him in his career. So I know, and he knows, that he relishes those opportunities to match up against the other team's top lines. But he was playing with two more defensive-minded wingers and Cale Yarncroak and Austin Watson. I thought it was a good choice to move him with Matt Duchene and Mikhail Granlund because they're all offensive-minded. As you mentioned, they're all underperforming. And I think maybe they can all get the best out of each other. So I am very curious to see how that plays out and how long John Hines sticks with it.
Adam, Yannick Weber has now scored a goal. Jared Tenorti has now scored a goal. Pekkarinen now has a goal. How much pressure is on Dan Hamhuis to score a goal?
Well, when I wrote that story about him having the longest active goal drought in the league, which was in early November, it was at, I think, 96 games. So it's got to be in, like, the 120 range, 125 range by now. because I wrote that story the day after the game in Detroit. So I don't know what he has to do. You know, it would be great to see just for – I mean, I tweeted last night at the end of the first period, I've seen Pecorine and Jared Tenorti score goals this year, and I'm not sure which is more miraculous. I think Dan Hanhuis might actually take the cake, other than Pecorine, of course.
And he's had some opportunities where we thought it was going to be his goal, but some tips, late tips, took that away. So we'll see. Just having a little fun with that. Certainly we've talked about that with you. By the way, Colton Sissons, do we think there's a chance maybe he plays tonight?
I mean, John Hines said that there could be a chance when I asked him about it yesterday. He's on the trip, and he skated yesterday, and John said that he could either play tonight or maybe Saturday against the Vegas Golden Knights. So that's encouraging because he's been out for a while since before the coaching change. He hasn't played a game under John Hines yet. And also Ryan Ellis, when I asked John yesterday, he said that Ryan skated on his own, I believe, on Tuesday, which John said in his mind was the first time he can recall Ryan skating since he was injured in the Winter Classic. He said he's progressing slowly, but he's progressing, which is a great sign that he's able to resume physical activity with the nature of his injury. They miss him dearly. So, you know, it's sort of like, you know, you always use that, you know, that phrase around this time where an injured player comes back around the trade deadline. It's like a trade deadline acquisition. You know, if Ryan Ellis can come back healthy in the stretch run, that's going to help this team tremendously.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic is with us. And another along the lines of what is John Hines trying to do to shake it up and find the right formula for this group? And you referenced this with Mikael Granlund in your article specifically about him, but I've noticed Mikael Granlund and Kyle Turris, another key guy to try to get going, they have put those guys out there on the penalty kill. And that's interesting. They have been better in that area. They did give up a power play goal last night, but it was kind of a fluky play. And they're going up against a really tough power play unit. And of course, they get a shorthanded goal in there as well. So they came out ahead on special teams last night in Washington. But that's an intriguing move, trying to get Turris and Granlund just on the ice more, get them involved in the game more.
Yeah, certainly. And it was interesting because I think he's averaged about a minute and a half of shorthanded ice time per game since the coaching change. Before the coaching change, he was averaging a whopping 4 seconds of shorthanded time per game, which is basically by accident. You weren't put out there on purpose. You were basically out there by accident. But yeah, I think that's a good thing. Cause I know John Hines' penalty kill, which if I'm not mistaken, they like to be aggressive. You know, they like the opportunity to create some shorthanded opportunities, and having Mikael Granlund and Kyle Turris, you know, who are players who can create those opportunities on the penalty kill helps. And it's good to get players involved. There are players who only play in certain situations and they end up sitting on the bench for long periods of time. Perhaps getting Mikael Granlund, you know, a minute and a half of shorthanded ice time per game helps him in other areas in terms of keeping the flow of the game and keeping him steady as well. So I think that's a smart thing by John Hines to do.
They switched last night from the four-line balanced attack to where they wanted to hit you in waves to more of the traditional, I'm going to load up the first two lines, then I'm going to have more of a checking line, but you know, not to insult Nick Bonino, Craig Smith, and Rocco Grimaldi because they've been very good all around, and then have more of what a fourth line normally looks like on a given night with some scrappy guys that you're spotting in there and not playing as much. They've kind of gone back and forth with these two philosophies. The key is for somebody like Matt Duchene, and it was him last night, to play out of position on the wing. I'm wondering if that sticks.
Yeah, that's a good question. I've noticed that, you know, I noticed it against the Maple Leafs. The ice time, you know, among the top forwards was pretty low comparatively. I know Ryan Johansson played 10 and a half minutes, but I think Matt Duchene played 15 and a half, 16 minutes. Philip Forsberg played 16 or 16 and a half minutes. You know, in those situations, when you're trailing, you need to put your big guns out there more often. So I actually do think, you know, that it would be smart of John Hines to play his top guys more so than his bottom six guys. Of course, you know, the Bonino line, as it's constructed, has been one of the more productive lines that this team has had this season. So you want to make sure that you're also keeping them engaged. But I am interested. I haven't done it, but I'm planning to, looking at the disbursement of ice time by forwards over John Hines's tenure once we have a larger sample, just to see if I can notice some trends. But that I did notice that as well last night, Willie, and I think that's actually a good thing, a step in the right direction.
What do you think it'll be like tonight in the building with John Hines coaching against the team he's very familiar with? You would have to think that will be a big theme, a feeling in the building that you get.
Yeah, and you know, he spoke about it yesterday in Washington too, that you know, he appreciates the New Jersey Devils for giving him the opportunity to break into the NHL. We spoke to PK Subban earlier, and he had nothing but good things to say about John Hines and the time that they spent and how he felt that John Hines would help his former teammates. So I imagine a tribute of some kind. I know that the record and the playoff appearance did not go as well as planned for John Hines, but you know, as PK said to me earlier, you know, look how fast he got hired. I mean, that speaks to how good of a coach he is, that he wasn't unemployed for very long. So I'm sure he'll receive a warm welcome. I'm looking forward to tonight's game. I mentioned last night on Twitter that, you know, for all the talk that we've had recently about this team's lack of pushback, the fact that they didn't fold under pressure, especially after the Nick Bonino own goal and were able to come back and win against the best team in the league on the road, you know, I think that speaks volumes, and they deserve a lot of credit. But, you know, this Devils team is not very good, and you don't want to have a letdown. So tonight's game is just as important to make sure that the Predators, as I mentioned, don't have a letdown against a team that's significantly worse than the one they played yesterday.
No doubt about it. Adam, thanks for the visit, as always. Enjoy the game. We'll see you when you get back.
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right. Adam Vingan from The Athletic. Come back and close out hour number two next.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.